As Cameron said, I am John. I'm married to our co-pastor, Deb. We've been married forever now. You know? What's that? Forever is easier to remember, you know. It's just easier. It changes every year. How do you expect me to keep up with that, you know? Forever just seems better. So I was going to ask you, were you all here last week to see Deb's message on anger? Yeah, it was really awesome, wasn't it? So my favorite part was she showed this video clip of the Hulk, you know, and he turns around and he says, "That's my secret, I'm always angry." You see, I feel that I should get like co-credit for writing that because like I am her muse for being always angry. Without me, she couldn't have wrote that message, you know. Actually, no, Deb and I get along really good. We've been married a long time, and I think we're at that point in our marriage where we're just really comfortable with each other. You know, there's no worries. The example I wanted to give you was a while back we took a road trip to Texas to see our daughter and her family. And so we were driving through Dallas, you know, the usual big city driving, you know, six lanes, road construction, all that. And all at once she just reaches over and just plucks a hair out of my ear. I'm like, ow! What is that? And she says, "It's been bothering me for 300 miles. You know, like, fair enough, you know. Normally on Sundays, I'm in kids. I usually teach sixth graders. So if you're willing to learn at a sixth grade level, I'm willing to teach at a sixth grade level. All this is going to be good, you know. So let me ask you, have you ever come to the point in your life where you figured out you didn't know as much about something as you thought you did? I wanted to share where that happened to me once. I grew up in a family business. My dad has a garage in Troy Grove. And so somewhere around seventh grade, I started working there, you know, pushing a broom, cleaning, painting, all that stuff. But it didn't take long before I had a wrench in my hand. And, you know, I worked a lot with my dad, a lot with the other mechanics. And it became really apparent that God kind of gave me sort of a talent for fixing stuff, understanding how to take it apart, how to put it together. You know, it was kind of easy for me, sort of. Anyhow, by the time I got out of high school, I kind of thought I knew what was going on, you know? I mean, I'd been working on cars a long time, and I thought, you know, I wasn't prideful, but I kind of thought, you know, I this mechanic thing, I kind of got it down. But I thought, you know, I'm going to go to college and see what they know. So I signed up for IVCC, and I went down there, and I was flabbergasted at how little I knew. I was amazed how much more there was to it. I just remember that feeling like, oh my God, you know, there is so much more than I ever imagined. And it happened again later in life when I became a God person, you know. Started following after Jesus. I got saved, started going to church, you know. And I thought, how hard can this Christian thing be, right? You know, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, you know. Stop dropping F-bombs. This is easy. I got this, right? It can't be that hard. And then I started reading the Bible, and I had that same feeling, like, wow, there's so much more to it. I was so far off. I just remember that, like, wow, this is way bigger than I thought. So I got to thinking, if I was this far off, maybe other people are this far off. So I was thinking, you know, if you're all here today, you're obviously following after God, but you know, if you think you have it all sewed up, if you think I'm good with God, I'm solid, maybe you're not. You know, I wasn't. So I just wanted to say this to set the stage for my lesson. At Acts Church, we obsess over all things Jesus. You know, what Jesus said, what Jesus did, we're all about that. And I think that's pretty typical of most healthy Christian churches. You know, you would expect to go to a Christian church and hear about Christ. But here at Acts, we also talk a lot about the Bible. We teach from the Bible. We encourage you all to read the Bible. And I think sometimes people don't understand or they've never learned the close, intimate relationship that Jesus has with the Bible. So I wanted to read to you in Matthew 5:17 through 18. It says, "Don't misunderstand why I have come. I did not come to abolish the law of Moses or the writings of the prophets. No, I came to accomplish their purpose. I tell you the truth, until heaven and earth disappear, not even the smallest detail of God's law will disappear until its purpose is achieved. You see, we read the Bible and we teach from the Bible because Jesus directs us to. So that being said, when I was thinking about what I wanted to teach about today, I was kind of going over some of the spiritual milestones in my life and thinking, what has happened to me that I might be able to share that might benefit others? And so I think probably the biggest thing was when I started reading the Bible, not as a novel, but as a textbook. When I came to the point where I turned my focus inward and started looking at my core values, my spiritual beliefs, you know, my values, my morals. When I started comparing those to the Bible, when I got to the point where I became spiritually mature enough to allow myself to be taught. Now, you might say, well, John, I learn all the time. I probably learn something new every day. But see, there's a difference between learning and being taught. Learning is typically something that we do, you know, on our level, at our pace, at our convenience. You know, like maybe you take up a new hobby, guns, golf, gardening, whatever. So you go buy a book. And when you get a chance, you read the book because it interests you. Or maybe there's a honeydew around the house, you know, a project. So you go on YouTube and you watch some videos, you know, and that's all well and fine. But it's what interests you and what you want to do when you want to do it. But being taught is different. Being taught, you know, sometimes you're taught something that you don't particularly want to know. And it might be about something personal that you don't want to change. And it could be at a time not all that convenient for you. When we're young, we're all taught. We're taught by our teachers. We're taught by our parents. We're taught by life, the school of hard knocks. But at some point, we grow up and we just stop being taught. You know, we gather up all this information that we've got, and we decide that it's all true and it's all good, and it more or less forms who we are, you know. But see, there's a problem here. We all don't have the same inputs. We all didn't have the same childhood. So, like, if we were to take 20 people from this audience and we were to ask them all the same question, some current world topic, some hot button issue or something like that, we very well might get 20 different answers. And everyone would think they're right. You know, I mean, we all think we're right, but we can't all be right, right? Not be lined up with God. Now, you take me, for instance. I had a pretty good upbringing. I mean, my parents were kind, loving parents, you know, honest, decent people. I think they did a decent job raising me. You know, I didn't do much prison time or anything like that, you know. But God was never part of my upbringing. My parents weren't God people. So for me to think that my core values line up with God is like a million to one shot, right? I mean, how can who I am be lined up with God if God was never part of what made me, you know, or formed my personal views? They usually say that somewhere around 20 or 21 years old is where we become who we are. Up to that point, we're gathering information. You know, we're taking it all in. But somewhere around 20 or 21, we kind of is where you are who you are. Now, that's not to say that people can't change. We see people change all the time here at Acts. But for the most part, you know, you are who you are. But because we all have different upbringings, it would be really hard to say that we line up with God, all of us line up with God. For instance, if you were brought up in the church, if you were a church kid, well, you know, perhaps most of your values line up with God. But if you discovered Jesus later in life, like if you were in your late 20s or 30s or 40s, you know, the odds that you have a deep-rooted foundation, you know, solid with God are really slim. I wanted to read to you in Luke 6:46. It says, "So why do you keep calling me Lord, Lord, when you don't do what I say? I will show you what it is like when someone comes to me, listens to my teaching, and then follows it. It is like a person building a house who digs deep and lays the foundation on solid rock. When the floodwaters rise and break against that house, it stands firm because it is well built. But anyone who hears and doesn't obey is like a person who builds a house without a foundation. When the floods sweep down against that house, it will collapse into a heap of ruins. So God wants us to have a deep-rooted foundation with Him. He wants our core values to match up. So when is it time to look inward at our core values? Well, for that, it helps me to think of us being on a journey together. I think of us all like on a highway going the same direction. So you're driving along, and as far as you can see, there's cars ahead of you. And these are all people that started their journey before you. And you look back, and there's cars as far as you can see, and these are people that got on the highway after you. Sometimes you're driving along, and you come across someone going slower than you, and you pass them up. Sometimes there's someone just on fire for Jesus, and they pass you up. But the point is, sooner or later, we're all going to come to that mile marker, we'll call it a maturity marker, where it's time to turn our focus inward and compare who we are, who is our core values, and do they line up. Now, if you're just getting on, if you're still on the on-ramp, you may not have come to that point yet, but my advice to you is hit the gas and get there soon. The sooner you get to that point, the easier the whole rest of the trip is. Now, if you've been driving for a while, you may have missed it. You know, you might have been adjusting the radio or talking to your wife or something like that, but it's very well that it could be time for you to be looking inward. I have another piece of advice for you. When you start this process, when you start reading and comparing, don't spend your time looking in the rearview mirror at what happened in the past. Look out the windshield and focus on what's going to happen. See, I found that when you start reading the Bible, it does a couple different things, but primarily we read the Bible not to compare to what's already happened. We read the Bible to prepare for what's going to happen. You see, so we don't read the Bible to compare to our past mistakes. We read it to prepare and avoid future mistakes. Very important. So, like, you don't need to be reading in the Bible to make sure that that lie you told that cost you your job was bad. It was bad, okay? It was the wrong thing to do. But you do want to be reading so you can prepare so when something, a situation happens in the future, you don't make a similar mistake and cost you your marriage like it cost you your job, you know. So how are we taught? Well, as I mentioned, the primary way is reading the Bible. When I started reading the Bible and turning my focus inward, comparing my core values, I found that the Bible either confirmed my values, it contradicted my values, or it questioned my values. I think the Bible either confirms, contradicts, or questions our values. Now, let me just say, the Bible doesn't contradict us. We contradict the Bible. The Bible is the authority. But for the sake of this lesson, we'll look at it from our standpoint. So, when I started looking inward, I found that my beliefs, my values, my morals, the Bible confirmed most of those. I was close. But when I set my sights on my spiritual beliefs, the Bible contradicted a lot of those. I had to make changes. And there were a few things that the Bible questioned. You know, I just didn't have an answer. I couldn't figure it out. But I found that if you keep that, you know, if you're struggling with something, if you're thinking, man, is this right? Is this wrong? This belief I have, if you just keep it in the forefront of your mind, eventually you'll come to it when you're reading. It'll pop up. Now, for me, it takes me probably a year and a half to read through the Bible at my pace, you know, maybe longer, maybe shorter, but sometimes I just get impatient. I don't want to wait that long to find out the answer. So I'll seek out a pastor. I'll seek out someone that has more wisdom than me, and I'll ask, you know, what about this? And generally, it's something really easy, like go read Ephesians 3 or something like that, and boom, there it is. You know, you're contradicted or you're confirmed. You know what I kind of wanted to do? I kind of wanted to go down a tangent here for a minute and give you some real-world application to this. Instead of just talking about theory about reading the Bible and comparing yourself, I kind of wanted to give you like a practical application of like what happened to me when I started doing this. So when I turned my focus inward and started comparing myself, I came across this passage in the Bible. It was Proverbs 12:22. It says, "The Lord detests lying lips, but he delights in those who tell the truth." So God detests lies. So God hates lies is what it's saying. That's pretty strong. God hates. Maybe some of you are sitting there thinking, John, duh, God hates lies, of course. But I guess I never thought of God hating. That's a strong emotion, right? I don't like it when a regular Joe hates me, let alone God. I think if there's a sentence and it says God hates, I don't want John anywhere over here at all. I want John somewhere over here, right? God hates. I don't want no part of whatever the rest of that is, you know. I want to be over here. And then I read in Matthew 15:19, it says, "For from the heart come evil thoughts, murder, adultery, all sexual immorality, theft, lying, and slander." So wait a minute. God just put lying, murder, and adultery in the same line. This is obviously way more serious than I thought. I always thought of lying as not the right thing to do. I always tried to avoid lying. I didn't really much like it, but, I probably, stretched the truth a few times if the story was good. I probably, told some white lies, some fibs here and there. I guess I always used to look at it as like, well, we're not supposed to lie, right? We're not supposed to speed. We're not supposed to drive in the passing lane, right? But you never hear anybody say, well, you're not supposed to murder. No, it's murder. It's bad, right? We don't do that, right? But if you think about a fib, it's just a short little lie, right? So if I murder a short little person, is it okay? No, it's bad. God doesn't like it, right? So when I read this, I thought, John, you need to make a major change here. There is no part of fibbing, lying, stretching the truth that God is down with here. God hates lies. So I kind of adopted this policy for me, honesty all times always. And that can be hard to do. But I just felt that it was like a change that I needed to do, Now, to be honest, not lying isn't that hard. You just don't do it, If you catch a fish this big, you don't tell people it's this big. You just don't lie, I found that the hardest thing to do is to not lie to save someone's feelings. We usually do that. I think everybody struggles with that. Geez, I can't come to your party because I've got this other thing I already committed to doing. When inside you're saying, I don't want to come to your party because I don't like you. You're not a nice person. Sometimes you're kind of a jerk to me, but you don't want to say that out loud. But that's what you're thinking. That's the toughest part about not lying or being truthful is we're put in those positions. So I thought I'd share a couple circumstances from my life of where this affected me and how I implemented it in my life. One of them I can think of is at one point in my life, someone went way out of their way to be really kind and get me this really awesome gift. And they were pretty happy with themselves. They did really good. It was a good gift. And somehow, I don't remember how, but somehow I found out about it ahead of time. So of course I didn't say, oh yeah, I know what I'm getting, no big deal. Why crush the person, right? So I told the truth. I said, man, this is an awesome gift. I love this. I've actually always wanted one of these. I said, thank you so much. This is great. See, I told the truth with compassion. I think that's the key when we're Christians, is honesty with compassion. I think you can use that all throughout your life in different places. It kind of makes me giggle because I wonder if we've got any what about people here. You know those what about people? You know who I'm talking about? you know, those people that no matter what you try to teach or what point you're trying to make, there's always that one thing that flies in the face of that. You know what I'm saying? Because I kind of can be a one-about person too, you know. Like, you remember from like school, you know, the teacher would be like, you know, mammals are fur-bearing and give birth to live young. And he'd be like, you know, what about the duck-billed platypus, you know? There's always those guys, you know, that have that. So I'm thinking right now, there's probably a couple guys sitting back here right now with their arms crossed thinking, yeah, sure, John, this whole honesty thing is great, really great, but you haven't addressed the question, John. What about the question? Ah, yes, the question. For thousands of years, man has tried to figure out the correct answer to the question. Plato and Socrates devoted much of their life to finding the right answer to the question. And of course, by the question, I mean, does this dress make me look fat? Right? So listen, I actually got a handle on this. I got a handle on this. I did a bunch of thinking about it and stuff like that. See, the guys, the reason that you're sitting there before your wife with the deer in the headlights look on your face is because you're trying to answer the wrong question. You see, when your wife asks you this, what she's actually asking you is, do you still find me attractive? Do you still love me? And see, that you can answer wholeheartedly and honestly. If my wife asks me that, I just say, oh, baby, you look great tonight. Man, you are rocking that dress. Let's go dancing, you know? You can answer that honestly. And I've got some facts to back this up, you know? Well, first, why would any woman in their right mind ask someone like me for fashion advice, right? I mean, I'm lucky that when I leave the house in the morning, my socks match, okay? That's silly, right? Second of all, she's a grown woman. She's got a mirror and she knows how to use it, right? She knows exactly how she looks, right? Now, sometimes my wife will kind of throw me for a loop. You know what, that secondary question? You know, the red dress or the green dress, you know? Now, she already knows which dress she's going to wear. She just wants to confirm her choice with me. So I'll look at it and I'll say, red dress, and she'll wear the green one. She just wants to make sure that someone with no fashion sense disagrees with her, so she's right, see? So I just wanted to share this little, like, real-world application for you, so this isn't just all theory and stuff like that, you know, or you. So anyhow, we see that we can be taught by reading the Bible. But of course, we can also be taught by listening to messages. Now, this is a great one, okay? But when it comes to pastors preaching messages, you need to get on board. You need to actively engage in the message, right? You can't be a bystander sitting there watching traffic go by, right? It's not like watching a TV show and it's over with and you're like, oh, that was good, you know? Or, you know, you can't be that person who goes and says, hey, that's a good message, and you go back to doing the same thing you always did. No, you got to actively engage the message. Listen to what the pastor's saying. Think about, what's he saying? Is he saying it to me? What is this saying to my spiritual beliefs, to my core values? What, you know, my values? What is he saying to me? You know? And if the pastor says something and you get kind of a, ooh, I disagree with that, that's great. Now dive into the Bible and find out who's wrong. Because somebody's wrong, right? If you disagree, one of them, that's a great teaching moment for you right there. But you got to actively engage. You can't just sit back and just let the message go by. The third way that we learn, and by far the most awesome, is when God Himself teaches us. Okay, this is awesome because it's just an in-your-face, undeniable way. So for this, let me paint a picture for you. Okay, just visualize this. There's a young couple in love, and they get married, and life is good. And they have a couple kids, and life is great. And like any young couple, they want the best for their kids, you know, they're protective, they dote over them. But it doesn't take them long to see that what the world is offering isn't that great, you know. The crud coming out of Hollywood, most of it they can't let their kids watch, you know. And the stuff they're learning on the school bus is horrifying, you know. Maybe there's some teachers at school that have an agenda that disagrees with their core values. So this young couple decides to join a local church. They figure that more wholesome teaching is going to be beneficial for their kids. So they join a local church, they start attending, and things are good. Before long, they're going to a small group at night. They start serving on a team. You know, everything is just, they're blending right in. They're good. And then one day the pastor does a message about giving. And they kind of get a little check right here, you know, like, I don't know, this is my money. I don't know that I want to be giving it. But they get over that little bump in the road and they keep going. Everything is good. And then one day they do this crazy notion. They invite Grandpa Joe to their small group. Now, Grandpa Joe is one of these miserable, cantankerous old people. You know, the kind of person you just can't stand to be around. You know, you dread holidays because you don't want to have to go to his house. You know, he's just not kind. He's never nice. He's just a mess, you know. And through strictly an act of God, Joe decides to go to the small group. Who knew, right? So Joe starts attending the small group, and he makes some friends. And then one night, Joe reveals this deep, dark secret he's been carrying around his whole life. He talks about this horrible thing that happened to him when he was young. And all of a sudden, you look at Joe a little differently. You know, you kind of understand where he's coming from. You look at him through a different lens. Over the next few weeks and months, they notice a softening in Joe. He's a little nicer. He's a little easier to be around. And then the absolute unthinkable thing happens. Joe gives his life to Jesus, and he's radically changed. And now this young couple can't help but give to the local church. They see the incredible value that it provides to the neighborhood and the people that attend, and they finally realize that rent has to be paid and curriculum has to be bought for these small groups. See, what the Bible couldn't teach and what the pastor couldn't teach, God himself teaches. And it's undeniable, you know. So, from this, what are your action steps? What do you need to do? First of all, if you're not reading the Bible, you need to be reading the Bible. It's a must thing, right? If you don't have a Bible, we give them away at guest services all the time. Go back and get a Bible. You must be reading the Bible to move forward in your faith. If you have a Bible and it doesn't make sense to you, it doesn't speak to you, you can't understand it, we have great Bibles, very inexpensively, like the Wayfinding Bible. Great choice, you know. Don't ever get caught up on words, all right? It's okay to stumble on concepts. It's okay to stumble and not understand the point that God's making, but don't ever let yourself stumble and can't figure out words. Don't let a thee or a thou keep you from reading the Bible. Get a translation that speaks to you, that you get, okay? Second, if you are reading the Bible, I challenge you to read it differently. I challenge you to read it as a textbook. Read it differently, not as a novel. You know, don't just, like, you know, a lot of people, they'll read a book and they'll put it down and say, so what? Not the Bible. Read the Bible and actively engage with it. See what it's saying to you. Sometimes people will say things to you like you need to read, a paragraph a day or a page a day or a chapter a day. I'm not worried about you reading a chapter a day or whatever like that. I want you to read until you find something that challenges you. Read until you find something that requires contemplation, you know. Read till something speaks to your core value where you have to stop and think about that. If you're in Proverbs, you might only have to read one line, you know, and then you stop and think about it. Third, if this message is for you, if this is where you're at, if you're ready to make a change and look inward, you know, then what I want you to do is go to the Acts website, go back into Look and Listen, into the archives, and look up a message series Cameron did called The Next Step. It's similar to what I've done here today, but way better. He's a better teacher. He stretched it out into 3 weeks. It's way more in-depth. Everybody can benefit. You know, it should be all your homework. Everybody go watch The Next Step, right? You'll all benefit from that. So what I want to do is challenge you. My prayer for you is that you look at the Bible differently from now on. I challenge you to read it as a textbook and not as a novel. I pray that God gives you the strength, the wisdom, and the courage to go back and look at those 20-year-olds' values that you're still carrying around and make some changes. You know, we all know what it was like to be 20. We didn't much value honesty. We didn't much value integrity, and we most definitely didn't value purity. But that's not for us anymore, okay? So I pray that you can go in and have the courage to change those 20-year-old's values that you're carrying around. I thank God for all of you being here today, and I thank God for giving me the opportunity to teach you all. Thank you. It's been an honor to get to talk to you.